fasten your seatbelt and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip. I'm Glenn Moberg, and as the song goes, you can't always get what you want. The Congress of the United States took us right up to the edge of the default deadline last night and then passed the Senate compromise to pull us back from the brink, for now. But the debt ceiling extension and the end of the shutdown will not last long. On January 15th of next year, we could go through it all over again. This is Route 51. The vote in the House was split, 286 in favor, including all of the Democrats, and 144 opposed, all Republicans. Wisconsin Republican Reed Ribble voted yes, the only Wisconsin Republican to vote with a majority. Paul Ryan and Sean Duffy voted no, and in a statement, Duffy said, quote, "I came to Washington to change the way things are done in this town. I still believe it is immoral for our government to continue living for today while saddling our children with a debt and inevitable tax increases to pay for it." Third District Democratic Congressman Ron Kind voted yes, saying in a news release, "This legislation will put furloughed workers back on the job and ensure that America will not become a deadbeat nation." He goes on, "We just can't afford to allow any more damage to our economic growth because of congressional dysfunction." This is the second week in a row that Route 51 has addressed this issue. Last week, we featured Sean Duffy and Ron Kind, and today, analyzing the fallout, we have with us political scientist Ed Miller of UW-Stevens Point and Eric Giordano of UW-Marathon County. We're also taking your phone calls at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Now, this is a pledge drive day. We will be breaking for pledges for a few minutes. A couple more times this hour. So if you want to make a comment on the debt ceiling and the government shutdown, you should probably try to get in line right now. 1-800-780-9742. Let's start with our two political scientists. And Ed Miller, we'll start with you. Your general impressions of what happened last night and what the country went through for more than 2 weeks.
Well, I think ultimately what happened last night was there was a capitulation of Republicans, and they essentially agreed to temporarily extend the debt ceiling as well as open the government. However, the 16 days of shutdown and the potential of default has created major economic problems. I mean, the first thing is it's only limited extension, but its impact of the shutdown is at least $29 billion on the U.S. government itself. It reduces, the estimate is, 0.3% from the fourth quarter of the GDP, which is about $12 billion. And one estimate is, of course, it's only an estimate, is that it meant 900,000 jobs that are actually lost because of the shutdown. And this has created all kinds of uncertainty in the business community with a limited extension and so forth, whether this is going to be repeated. As a result, we're going to find a great effect on the economy, on jobs, and the international standing of the United States in the, I'm talking about particularly the international monetary area.
Eric Giordano, your comments on what's happened over the last couple of weeks.
Well, 17 years ago, the Republicans forced a government shutdown, tried to force Clinton's hand at that time, and they actually forced some concessions. This time around, the tactic failed, and unfortunately, as Ed points out very clearly, it's really cost the American public. The one thing I'm worried about is not only the economic costs, but the costs in ever-decreasing confidence in government and the ability of government to solve problems and the effect that could have on people's willingness to participate in civic society.
Well, comment, Eric, if you would, on the split in the Wisconsin delegation. We've got Ron Kind, of course, voting with the Democrats, as all the Democrats did. But we have Sean Duffy voting no and Reed Ribble voting yes. Tom Petri, who has he has a reputation as being a moderate, he voted no. Ron Johnson voted no. Paul Ryan voted no. Reed Ribble, the only Republican who voted yes.
Yeah, I think this is a consequence of the fact that we have increasingly numbers of safe districts, so-called safe districts, within the House of Representatives. Some people claim there's only 75 competitive districts in the House these days. And I think Congressman Petri is an interesting bellwether of this situation. I think he read the tea leaves and said to himself, you know, I have to vote no here, or there's a good chance I will not be reelected. I think the
tea leaves, that's no pun intended, I
right, exactly. the Heritage Action Group has, you know, came out and said, you know, we will out-primary any Republican. We will mark down the Republicans that fail to, you know, vote no on this, and we will try to put up primary candidates to oust them. And I think this is a real threat for even moderate Republicans, especially moderate Republicans, but also even conservative Republicans.
Ed Miller, same question. Comment on the split in the delegation.
I was a little surprised by Petri, but Ripple didn't overly surprise me because that is a competitive district. I mean, we've had Democrats in that district. Now, the district is slightly different than it had been before after redistricting. But one, it's a competitive district. The other thing is Ripple had indicated he had heard from constituents, and that was the reason that he voted the way he did. But one of his constituents is there's a lot of health care in that area from Green Bay going down. And he may have heard from hospitals and all who did not want this in particular because of the fact is that by covering these individuals with the health care, even though whether he's against it or for it, but by pressing this health care issue, it makes it harder for hospitals because you would have more patients coming in who don't have any insurance and what we call uncompensated care.
Well, Ribble is also a small businessman. He owns a roofing company. It's widely believed that small businesses were hurt by the shutdown and they would have been devastated by a default, would have raised interest rates. He might have, you know, his company might have ended up getting less roofing business if that had happened. Do you think that might have influenced him, Eric Trudeau?
It could have been not only small business, but large business. The Chamber of Commerce tremendously denounced this shutdown and the possibility of default. And they've made it rather clear that they're rather angry at the Tea Party members of the Congress, and they're planning on putting money behind moderate challengers. What Eric said is absolutely correct, that the threat has been that more conservative challengers would run against anybody who did not vote to continue the shutdown. But the fact is that the Chamber of Commerce said that, look, you know, we're disaffected with the Republican Party, and we're not going to align with the Democratic Party, but we are going to put some money behind and recruit moderate challengers. Now, that's not in every district. They were talking about 12 to 14 districts, I think is what they said.
Well, one of those districts is the 7th Congressional District. Sean Duffy is, you know, a person that they identified as possibly having problems in the general election, at least according to a poll by PPP, which is a Democratic-affiliated group. The poll was paid for by MoveOn.org, but it said that he would lose to a generic Democratic challenger because of the whole shutdown. And then another group, a labor group, Americans for Change, put out an ad already against him in the district. I'm going to play that ad and have you comment on it. This is the ad put out against Sean Duffy already in the 7th Congressional District.
Sean Duffy joined Tea Party Republicans in Congress and shut down our government, putting hundreds of thousands of Americans out of work, slashing Head Start for thousands of kids, putting benefits for seniors at risk, denying cancer treatments for kids, and halting food inspections. Economists say Sean Duffy's Tea Party shutdown could weaken the economy and devastate middle-class families. Call Congressman Duffy. Tell him to do his job. End the Tea Party shutdown of our government.
Now, Mr. Duffy doesn't even have a Democratic challenger at this point, but that ad is already running in his district. Eric Giordano?
Well, I mean, what you have here is the door has been opened slightly, and the Democrats are trying to take advantage of that. But I think it's a little too early to call this, you know, a district for Sean Duffy to lose just yet. I mean, to possibly lose just yet. I mean, as you said, we don't even have a challenger. Second, I mean, it's really about what have you done for me lately? I mean, we're going to be back at this in January and February, and the question is, what are the Republicans going to do at that time? Are they going to employ these similar tactics, this brinkmanship sort of approach, or are they going to, you know, take it as in a more compromising way? And I think that will have a lot more to do with what happens in the Duffy election than what happened this time around. I think the Republicans have, you know, seen that this didn't work to their advantage.
We had Sean Duffy and Ron Kind on this very program last week talking about it at the height of the controversy. I'm going to place a couple of very short clips from both of them and then get your response.
That there's disagreement in Washington, that people aren't on the same page, is not unprecedented. We understand that people have different political points of view. What is unprecedented, though, is that we have a president that won't negotiate, that won't come to the table, that says, listen, he's called the speaker, you've reported it, I won't negotiate.
Well, first of all, it's a very disingenuous comment coming from the Speaker of the House. The Speaker knows fully well that the House and the Senate each passed their budget resolutions in April. The Democratic leadership has called 19 times to go to conference to resolve those differences in the two budgets over the last 6 months here. And the Republican leadership are the ones who have refused to go to conference and negotiate over any of these budget matters.
That was Ron Kind, preceded by Sean Duffy, both of them doing the blame game, Ed Miller.
Right, and, you know, what Congressman Duffy is repeating the Republican line, because the fact is that the president and as well as the Democrats, what Ron Kind said, were negotiating. Now, they weren't negotiating over the debt ceiling. That was clear. But they were negotiating on the budget. And one of the things that included in the continuing resolution is that what Democrats were against was the continuation of the sequester. The sequester was to expire at the end of the year, or the end of the fiscal year, which was at the end of September. And they've continued that sequester in this continuing resolution until at least January. And that's a lot of Democrats were against that. So in effect, they were clearly negotiating. So the president called him in every day, but the president did meet with him a number of times.
So this was a tough vote for some Democrats. Why don't the Republicans just claim victory? We kept the spending levels at the sequester levels. The Democrats didn't want that to happen. We won.
And a lot of people have said they should have.
Let's go to the phones right now, 1-800-780-9742, if you'd like to join the conversation. And we have Ned from Mosinee. Ned, you're on with Ed Miller and Eric Giordano.
Hi, just a couple points about Sean Duffy, since that was our recent discussion. First of all, the shutdown cost money and added to the deficit. For someone really concerned about the deficit, I'm surprised that doesn't come to light. And secondly, the sequester that we just talked about is a meat axe approach. It simply reduces the funding for everything across the board. And there's very few people that really think that's an appropriate way to reduce spending. And yet the Republicans are very much in favor of continuing the sequester. And my final comment is last night Sean Duffy had to make a choice and show his true colors. He voted with the Tea Party against the establishment Republicans, such as John McCain. And so we know where he stands, and that's where he's going to have to run in the next election.
Eric Giordano?
Well,
and thanks for the call, Ned.
Yeah, there's definitely plenty of blame to go around on the negotiation front. But, you know, clearly the president was in the driver's seat. The Republicans took a risk. Clearly it was driven by the more conservative elements, the Tea Party elements of that party. And Ned is right that the moderate establishment in the end realized that they were going to have to compromise on this issue. I would just disagree with one point, and that is that I think that the Republicans in general, especially the establishment Republicans, don't like the sequestered approach. They don't like the salami slicing exercise because it affects a lot of things that Republicans care about, including the defense budget.
And my understanding is, Eric and Ed, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but in January 15th, early January, when the next round of sequester cuts come into effect, it's the defense budget that's really going to be hit hard. So that may change some of the attitudes of some of the Republicans as they go into this conference.
Absolutely.
Committee.
I think that will help change it. And also I think the results of this tactic that failed will change the approach. At least that's my hope as a citizen.
Well, and also Reid had said, the Democratic Majority Leader in the Senate, he talked about just to get an agreement continuing the sequester now, but that after January, not necessarily getting rid of the sequester, but modifying the sequester, so that it would not be across the board, exactly what Eric said. And he's got a lot of Republicans to support the modification. Now, what they would agree to in the modification is another question.
Ed Miller, the 2014 election is more than a year away, but some Democrats are positively giddy. They're already saying that the Democrats now have a shot at winning back Congress. Could we see Speaker Nancy Pelosi once again?
We could. Typically, the party of the president loses seats in the midterm election. It's rare. After 1934, it's only happened twice, and in very unusual circumstances. And so if they pick up seats, they may not pick up enough to secure the majority in the House. But if they pick up any seats, really, even just a handful of seats, I think that's going to be a major negative on the Republican Party. And I think Speaker Boehner may be gone after that, just like Gingrich was in back in 98. Because Gingrich was involved with the sequester, the shutdown at that time, and then we had the 96 election, which they did okay, but 98, in fact, the Democrats picked up seats, and that created major opposition to Gingrich, and he had to step down as Speaker.
Yeah, of course, that was the tip of the iceberg for Gingrich. He was under a cloud of some ethical issues that also affected, I think, his ability to lead. But I think, Ed is right that this is possibly the pendulum could swing slightly the other way. I think it's hard to say because fundamentally we're still dealing with the same issue that really energized the Tea Party and the conservatives to begin with, that we really have massive debt that has to get under control. The question is, will Democrats give a little bit on the entitlement cuts, and will Republicans give a little bit on taxation to allow an increase to the budget?
Eric,
I just want to point out, even though the election is in 2014, it is now that candidates are deciding whether to run or not, and qualified challengers are a major factor in the election.
So maybe the poor polls facing some Republicans because of the shutdown, maybe that could attract better candidates on the Democratic side?
Absolutely. It's happened before.
We're talking to Ed Miller. He is a professor of political science at UW-Stevens Point, and Eric Giordano, associate professor of political science at UW-Marathon County, about the government shutdown and the debt crisis. I'm Glenn Mobrig. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio, 1-800-780-9742. If you'd like to weigh in, that's 1-800-780-9742. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be back in just a few minutes with more Route 51 Regional Talk Radio on the government shutdown and the debt ceiling crisis.
I can't twist the truth. It knows no regulation. Handful of senators don't pass legislation. This whole crazy world is just too frustrating. And you tell me over and over and over again, my friend, you don't believe we're on the eve of destruction.
Supporters of Wisconsin Public Radio include Peninsula Players, Ganchert Nursery, and Marshfield Clinic, proud supporters of WPR programs. Your business can join our ever-growing list of contributors. More information at wpr.org/sponsor.
Support also comes from Gunderson Health System, offering second opinions to those facing surgery or cancer treatment. Gunderson specialists are dedicated to giving options for making informed decisions. GundersonHealth.org/second opinion.
Well, this is the second week in a row that Route 51 has talked about the debt ceiling crisis and the government shutdown. Last week, we played this song, Burning Down the House, by the Talking Heads. It was a very popular selection and very appropriate. Did we, in fact, burn down the House of Representatives? And what are the long-term implications for the economy of the United States and for the American political system? 1-800-780-9742. If you'd like to join the conversation, it's 1-800-780-9742. I'm Glenn Mobrig. This is Route 51, and our guests, UW political scientist Ed Miller of Stevens Point and UW Marathon County's Eric Giordano. Gentlemen, let's talk about the president's role in this. The president hanging tough, an uncompromising stance. What do you make of that, Ed Miller?
Oh, he did, and I was surprised to some extent, although he had been criticized the last time for making compromises. And, some people felt that since you know, that he was trying, he was reacting to the previous criticism of him. But he was rather clear from the beginning that he would not negotiate the debt ceiling, because that was bills that we already had, but that he would negotiate budget matters.
Now, in 2006, President Obama was then Senator Obama, and he voted against a debt ceiling increase. And now here he is saying he won't negotiate over it. Is there some hypocrisy involved here, or do you think that 2006 vote was something he genuinely regrets?
I think he regrets it.
Sure, he does. And where you stand is where you sit. I mean, you know, he's in a totally different role, totally different position. And, you know, he had to be firm. And I think that Ed's right, that he was criticized as being very reactionary, sort of trying to negotiate the middle. And he got a lot of criticism from his own party on that he needed to tack further to the left, that he needed to take a stand. And I think it helped that, you know, the polls were generally in his favor, that, you know, people weren't willing to agree to a shutdown to change Obamacare or, you know, some of the other issues that the Republicans were trying to get.
Well, the president accused Republicans, and these are his words, of extortion and hostage taking. And he said he wouldn't negotiate because it would set a terrible precedent, not just for him, but for all future presidents in the entire country, that whenever a minority in the government don't get their way on a piece of legislation through the normal democratic process, they will shut down the government and threaten to destroy the American economy unless this legislative ransom is paid. Ed Miller?
Well, that was his point of view. And, you know, these are very, you know, the Affordable Care Act is law. And so the question is, could they bring up other laws that they don't like? But the other issue, they kept switching. It was not only the Affordable Care Act, but then they kept bringing up other issues, including the Keystone Pipeline, which is still in the process of making a decision on whether to go forth with the pipeline, and the like. So the question is, you know, they were not focused only on one issue. The Affordable Care Act was one, but he was arguing that you could bring up any law and you know, hold the government hostage. The interesting thing about the debt ceiling, we're the only country in the world that has a debt ceiling. It's really strange, because once you determine the budget, you in effect determine what your debt is going to be. And so consequently, why do we have a debt ceiling? We've only had it since the early 20th century. No other country has it.
Now, is the debt ceiling law even constitutional, Eric Giordano? I'm going to quote from National Journal, which asks the question, have Republicans forgotten that they too must abide by the Constitution? The 14th Amendment, they say, is explicit in its instruction to America's federally elected officials. The validity of the public debt of the United States shall not be questioned. That's in the Constitution. So maybe the entire debt ceiling law is something that we shouldn't even concern ourselves with.
Well, I think we're concerned because, you know, the reality forces us to be concerned. I know some were claiming maybe Obama should just invoke the 14th Amendment, you know, to force something, and that never came to it. And I don't think Obama would have been wise to try to do that and force some kind of a constitutional crisis. I think so far the Supreme Court has not stepped in to say that this is somehow unconstitutional. So until something like that happens, I think we're going to continue to see this sort of behavior.
Ed Miller, what would have happened if the president had invoked the 14th Amendment and basically told Congress to go chase on this?
They would bring a suit, and they may even bring it in original jurisdiction in the Supreme Court, which they would be able to bring. You know, there's some interesting questions. And one question is, if they brought the suit, members of Congress brought the suit, quite clearly, whether they would have standing even to bring the case. And so that is a particular issue. But as Eric said, it would bring a constitutional issue, and it probably would have started at least some resolutions of impeachment.
Is there any chance that a future Congress will scrap the entire debt ceiling law after what we've been through over the past couple of years?
They should, but probably not.
Yeah, I agree with that. I just don't see that happening, not because it shouldn't happen or because we as citizens do not want it to happen, but just because, you know, it's a default mechanism that seems to work in some cases for the processes of Congress. I think it makes government extremely inefficient, but sometimes I think the congressional leaders see it as a necessity.
One of the things that Wisconsin has that is actually sane, and that is when the end of our fiscal year occurs, which is the end of June, if they don't pass a budget, things continue. There's an automatic continuing resolution to continue things, the funding at last year's level. You know, some states have that, many don't. Illinois doesn't, for example, and the U.S. government doesn't.
Ed Miller, UW Stevens Point political scientist. Eric Giordano, UW Marathon County political scientist, talking about the end of the government shutdown and the debt ceiling crisis and the fallout. 1-800-780-9742. If you'd like to join the conversation, I'm Glenn Mobrig. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. Back with more and with your phone calls on the debt ceiling crisis and the government shutdown.
They're walking on the fighting side of me, running down a way of life our fighting men have fought and died to keep. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song that I'm singing be a warning. When you're running down our country horse, you're walking on the fighting side of me.
Contributors to Wisconsin Public Radio include Stevens Point Area Co-op, Peninsula Music Festival, and Import Auto Clinic. You, too, can help ensure the future of WPR with your business sponsorship. Find out more at wpr.org/sponsor.
Support for WPR comes from Wausau's Woodson Art Museum, welcoming the return of birds and art. See 125 all-new birds and artworks now through November 10th, along with five exhibitions from the museum's collection. More at lywam.org.
Yeah, one of these days we're going to pay it back, pay it back. The national debt, the deficit. The debt crisis is what we're talking about on Route 51, a pledge show, Route 51, with our political scientists, Eric Giordano of UW Marathon County and Ed Miller of UW Stevens Point. I'm Glenn Mobrig. Still time to squeeze a quick phone call in if you'd like to weigh in at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. I want to get back to these polls about who the American people are blaming. We've just got a few minutes to wrap up this show. Just 28% of Americans now have a favorable impression of the Republican Party, according to a Gallup poll. Only 24%, according to an NBC Wall Street Journal poll. The Associated Press found that just 5% of the public approves of the job being done by Congress. Ed Miller, these are startling numbers.
Right. And in the Wall Street Journal, the Republican support for the Republican Party is the lowest that it's ever been since they were involved in polling in 1989. And Congress has always been low, but now has really reached into the depth of lack of support.
And I read that for the first time in history, most Americans say they wouldn't even want to reelect their own congressman. Usually people say,
right,
you know, scrap Congress, but I like my guy.
That's a very interesting figure, because typically, even though people don't like the Congress, they like their own congressperson. And the fact is that during many years, it's always 90-some percent have been reelected, and in recent times, it was like 98% being reelected. This figure, Glenn, as you point out, could bode some change in 2014.
Well, Eric Giordano, there is a split in the Republican Party. Senator John McCain blamed the Tea Party faction for the shutdown. This is a quote. "We started this on a fool's errand, convincing so many millions of Americans and our supporters that we could defund Obamacare." Usually the Republicans are on the same page.
Well, they are in recent times, but not always historically. And I think there's certainly a split here between the ideological, you know, purity faction that really believes that, you know, government is not positive in general, that, you know, any sort of spending is inappropriate, that we've got to, you know, rein that in. But then on the other hand, you know, you've got business interests, which are saying, yeah, we don't like the taxation, but this sort of brinkmanship strategy and tactics really are inappropriate. And
bad
actually
for business.
Yeah, and they cause risk-averse behavior of business and low consumer confidence and all the things we've already talked about that has real effects on the economy. So I'm curious to see, you know, who's going to win this tug of war in the upcoming election?
Well, liberals are having a field day. Lawrence O'Donnell on the Republican split, this is what he said last night. He called it a battle for the hearts and minds of the heartless and the mindless.
Well,
that's a little extreme.
I've never heard that kind of a split. I mean, I've never heard. We've had the split, certainly, but that kind of vocalism of a party on TV and all against other members of the party, not only in terms of in general wings, but by name. So that's very unusual, I think.
Well, one thing that this has done is it's brought together a conference to talk about the serious problems we have of the debt right now. Republicans can claim a victory on that. In just the minute we have left, Ed Miller, do you think there will be serious negotiations on the debt now?
Well, I think they'll negotiate seriously, but the question is whether they can come to any resolution. The last time, which we wound up getting the sequester, which was the stick for them to agree, couldn't get an agreement. So I'm not terribly confident that they will, by, December 15th.
Eric Giordano, you've got about 15 seconds for the last word here.
Well, I think it's going to come down to, where, when we put our finger up to the wind, are the American people going to side more with the idea that we have to get an uncompromising stance to get a handle on things, or the other tendency, which is we do need compromise, and it's unclear which way the American people themselves are willing to go on that point.
Eric Giordano, Ed Miller, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We want to thank today's guests, Ed Miller, professor of political science at UW-Stevens Point, co-director of the Center for the Small City, and Eric Giordano, associate professor of political science at UW-Marathon County, director of the Wisconsin Institute for Public Policy and Service. Thanks to our executive producer, Rick Ryer, our on-air producer, Jane Ritger. Thanks to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. Special music today by the Rolling Stones, Barry McGuire, Elvis Costello, Merle Haggard, the Talking Heads, and War. Next week, Route 51 presents An Hour of Poetry as we talk to local poets and focus on the Wisconsin Fellowship of Poets convention in Stevens Point. Remember to pledge at WPR.org and remember to follow us on Facebook. And a reminder that Route 51 is now rebroadcast every Friday evening at 7 on 90.9 FM. Thanks for riding along with us today. Forward, as we say in Wisconsin. Until next week, we're heading out of town.